This program has been brought to you by Cider Week New York City, happening November 6th through 15th, 2015. For more information, check out ciderweeknyc.com.
Hey, 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 this is Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. We recorded a special cider show for Cider Week NYC, and you're going to listen to it live on Heritage Radio Network.
I'm Erica Wise, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. This is a special show. It's September 2015. We're sitting with the guys from New Holland Brewing and Artisan Spirits from Michigan. They're in New York City for Whiskey Fest, which is pretty cool. It's happening today. And this show will air sometime in the fall of 2015. Thanks to our sponsors, Union Beer Distributors, suppliers of world-class ales and spirits, which is kind of a cool thing that we're able to talk about beer and spirits now with a lot of the brewers and the reps that we know. We got Stephen Vallon. Stephen, how are you, buddy?
Doing great. How are you?
He's kind of our fall co-host from Brooklyn Brew Shop. And guys, introduce yourself. So this is the team from New Holland Artisan Spirits.
Rich Blair, sales manager, national sales manager with the company. Been with the company for about 7 years now, heading up the spirit side of everything that we do. So looking forward to the show, Jimmy.
And we've had you on before, you know, you're the national rep, right? You're traveling the country.
Yep, absolutely. And was on the show once before, about a year or so ago, I believe it was, and had a really good time. It was beer-centric spirits, and we do some pretty cool things. The brewery influences what the distillery does in a pretty big way. So that was a really good time on the show a little while back.
And we're recording at Jimmy's number 43 in the East Village, so you can hear sirens and horns going by. And this is actually the day the Pope's coming to New York, if you remember that by the time this airs. And you guys, tell us your names, too.
Yeah, my name is Adam Dickerson, and I work alongside Rich on the spirit side at New Holland. Been with the company for about 3 years. Was our events manager. Got a really awesome gig planning all the festivals and sponsorships and promotions around the country for New Holland for a while, and then decided to really wanted to start working directly on the spirit side. Had a real passion for what we produce, and think we have a great product, so was able to switch over to the spirit side, working alongside Rich, and I handle the Midwest for spirit sales and marketing and all that. So able to cover my homeland, Michigan, and the surrounding states that are
you guys
Indiana,
both from Michigan?
Yep, both Michigan natives, and be the first time we've really let this secret out of Holland. But Adam is moving to the east side of the country to take over some stuff that's happening out here. So we're losing him back home, and he's going to come out and do some good work out here with you folks.
Yeah, currently
you guys,
still in Michigan, though.
You brought along Joey, right?
Yeah, I'm Joe Stelmark. I'm the Northeast, soon-to-be just Mid-Atlantic, regional manager for New Holland. So I focus on beer, but I also sell beer and spirits out here. Adam's going to come in and take over Massachusetts, so I'll just cover New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and New York City.
So let's talk about breweries making spirits. So New Holland, did it start as a brewery?
Yeah, we actually started making beer in 1997. So this past summer in June, we celebrated 18 years, which is a pretty big feat for a small regional brewery like us. And then in 2005, we started distilling. Back then, the laws were a little bit different, so it was mostly brandies, and we just played around with some things like that. In 08, we started making, rum from molasses and cane sugar and whiskeys, and we really stretched our legs at that point. And that's when I came on board and got behind the program from a national standpoint. So, started as a brewery. It influences a lot of what we do on the distillery side, and I think you can see that in our stuff. We're going to taste some whiskeys today. You can see the fermentation and the approach to beer and how clean it is. And we drink a lot of beer in the making, and then a lot of whiskey afterwards.
Quality check.
Yeah,
quality
exactly.
You know, it's funny is that when we have a lot of these shows, I know Steven is a home brewer and has brew kits, but there's a dirty little secret that you can't distill at home, so you really technically can't get practice without being a pro, right?
There is truth to that, but it's amazing how many times I'll be at Whiskey Fest tonight. We'll have a really good time. I guarantee you. that several people will come up and start asking questions, and about 30 seconds in, they'll realize I'm not going to rat them out, and they start talking about their system at home. So a lot of people are doing this, whether we like it or not. So we just try to keep everyone safe and have fun while we're doing it. But yeah, a lot of that stuff does happen at home.
So I guess I'm wondering, how do people get trained in distilling in this country?
There are some programs, and because craft spirits have taken off the way that it has, some universities have actually picked up on this too. So like Michigan State University in East Lansing in Michigan, they have a craft distilling program, and they've had it for a few years. So you can go train there. A lot of people with a chemistry background. We're finding a lot of people from like the pharmaceutical industry are distilling in that genre, and they're getting a little bored with it. They want to be more artistic, so they, you know, branch out, throw their life savings into a beautiful pot still, and start making making spirits, which is a little more rewarding, I think, is why they're making that leap. And then there's the art side of it too, that a lot of people just love really, really nice whiskey, want to be part of that world, and jump into distilling for that reason.
And there's also the American Distilling Institute, which we are great. We support that. That organization as much as we can, but Bill Owens is the director of the American Distilling Institute, and they have books and publications on how to distill. So people take those books, but we know a lot of people, especially, you know, we have a lot of friends in Michigan who are opening distilleries, and they come and learn from us a little bit, and then they realize they want to do it themselves. They buy all the equipment, and then just trial and error. They figure it out as they go. That's why, you know, the quality of craft spirits in the country are only going to get better as people continue that trial and error method.
Well, let's taste and talk to you. So what is this first spirit you're pouring?
So this is beer barrel bourbon. It's currently probably the best example of how the brewery and distillery are so related. So we're probably best known for Dragon's Milk, which is a big 11% bourbon barrel aged stout. We make quite a bit of this beer, and we have a lot of these barrels. Once we pull the beer out of these you know, ex-bourbon casks, we weren't exactly sure what to do with them. So we had the bright idea of putting some bourbon back in this cask. So it's fully aged. You know, traditionally, it tastes great before it goes in the barrel. And then we put it in a Dragon's Milk cask, and it just becomes something completely different. It's beautiful whiskey and really related to Dragon's Milk. You can taste that malt backbone in a bourbon, which makes it pretty unique. And it's delicious. We drink far too much of this,
this whiskey. Quality check. Yeah. And so for the industry, before we talk about this, there's things like Whiskey Fest. You know, is that one of the better whiskey events in the country?
I would say yes. Whiskey Fest is great. We've been going to the one in Chicago for years now, and this is the first time that we've made the trip out east to go to the one in New York. I've heard it described with a few not safe for radio words, so I feel like tonight's going to be a really fun learning experience. People drink a lot and then go out afterward and have a you know, nice time together. The liquid courage is in abundance, I guess I would say. So Whiskey Fest is one of the greats. And then in addition to that, there is Tales of the Cocktail in New Orleans. That's a, you know, even for whiskey and not just cocktails, that's a great one. Marty Duffy, who is based in Chicago, and he's a global ambassador for Glencairn, the whiskey glass. He also helps put on these indie spirits expos. And there are maybe 7 or 8 of those around the country. I know he has one in New York in the spring every year. Awesome guy, puts on a really good show. It's inexpensive to get into, so it's a ton of fun.
Let's taste this. So this is the New Holland Artisan Spirits Beer Barrel Bourbon. Who wants to tell me what I'm tasting? Because, I mean, you know, I'm not used to tasting spirits compared to beer, you know. I taste alcohol.
So. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, most often you taste bourbon and you immediately get a big, bold sweetness that we in America tend to really latch onto. We love it. It's not overly sweet and syrupy, but it's just a really kind of that corn sweetness that we're all familiar with, that, you know, our grandparents were drinking with iced tea when we were growing up, and you took a little sip out of the glass, and now you go back to it and you love it. But you have that in beer barrel bourbon, but it's balanced really well with the barrel finishing of Dragon's Milk barrels. You get some of that malt sweetness out of the barrel, you get some vanilla, you get some caramel and some of those flavors from Dragon's Milk that really blend and mingle with the flavors of the corn sweetness and the original mash bill. So it really is a blend of flavors that we really, really like. You know, it was
Super Smith.
Yeah, very smooth and mellow and easy to drink, and it just kind of rolls off your tongue without any bite and any big.
Stephen, have you tasted a lot of spirits?
I dabble in the spirits, yeah. But yeah, this is really smooth. You do get some malt character, which I was a bit surprised from tasting it. Really, you mentioned the mash bill. As brewers, I'm wondering if you play around with that a bit more than the typical bourbon maker.
Certainly, you'll see that in some of the other whiskeys we're going to taste today. But we have access to really high quality barley as a brewery, so we're able to kind of go over to the brewer's barley area and really just kind of take what we want and experiment. And our distillers, Brad and Ryan, do an amazing job at finding a perfect blend of barley and rye and wheat and any of those grains that we use as a brewery and really come up with delicious whiskeys. We have a wheat whiskey that we source all grain from Michigan, and it's just a really, really unique whiskey with sweetness and spice and a really good balance of flavor. So it's definitely a benefit and a perk of being a brewery and a distillery.
So, Joe, you're selling to accounts.
Mm-hmm.
How do you bring a spirit into account? Let's say a place like Jimmy's Number 43, we're known for our craft beer, and then this year we got a full liquor license.
Well, I think
we're trying to meet a lot of the new distillers and definitely interested in breweries that are making spirits. I don't really know that much about it.
Yeah, well, the fun part about bourbon is it's kind of turning into what beer lovers are looking for. They're coming in and they want to try this, and they want to try the next thing, and they want to try the next thing. It's not the brand loyalty that we used to have, like when you would go home and your dad or your grandpa would drink the same whiskey for 40 years straight. Like, that is changing. And so when you go in, and now you go in, you'll see there'll be back bars that are filled with 40 or 50 or more whiskeys, bourbon, scotches, and what have you. And so when we come in, having an opportunity to be part of those 40, 50 bottles, but then also having the beer side of things, is you're familiar with Dragon's Milk, or you recognize New Holland as a beer brand, and now we have that, and we can translate it to spirits. This particular Beer Barrel Bourbon, it's awesome because Dragon's Milk, as our best-selling brand, people are aware of it, they know it, they love drinking it, and to connect the whiskey with the beer by the fact that they're going into the same casks and the same barrels is very fun and unique. We have a couple places that will do a Dragon's Maker or whatnot, and you have a Dragon's Milk with a side shot of Beer Barrel Bourbon. I suggest only one, but one of those. But
An Uber on speed dial.
But just, it's cool with this particular spirit to see the connection between the brewery, and it helps people make the jump that, you know, we're not just a great brewery, but we're also a great distillery. And it also gives name recognition, which, you know, sometimes with 40 or 50 bottles, mm-hmm. how do you make a choice?
Well, I think there's another layer to this, too, that craft beer was really on the forefront of convincing people they needed to pay attention to ingredients and a little more attachment to the producer. And so I think that craft beer was on the leading edge of that. And then we've seen it with cheese and bread and coffee, and craft in general, you know, as an approach to life has really moved forward in the last few years. And craft spirits is following that same trend. But it's going to have a different timeline, a different arc than those ones that came first. So it's happening much more quickly. People are embracing craft spirits much more quickly than it got to the tipping point with craft beer. And it's really fun, with that being said, to have this conversation and, you know, proudly say we started doing this 10 years ago. We have whiskey that is 10 years old that we made. So like it or not, we're veterans and we're on the front edge of that. It's really fun to be able to say that.
You know, as I'm tasting new whiskeys and American spirits, I'm starting to learn that some of them are actually distilled and bottled by the producer, and other people are buying a base.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me, how's that working? How does the consumer know, and is one better or the other?
Well, it's a really good question. I don't think that has like a black and white answer just yet. The way that I would answer that personally, and I feel like this represents my company as well, it's just honesty. You know, be transparent with what you put on the bottle. If it says produced and bottled by, it's most likely sourced whiskey. If it says distilled and bottled by, then it's probably grain-to-glass whiskey. You know, those things are on the bottle if you look for them. But let's not hide that story. Let's build the trust with our consumer. And there are some people, and I'll, you know, name names, like Smooth Ambler out of West Virginia. He's one of my favorite examples of, he has a tier of whiskey that he calls Old Scout. And it's very openly sourced whiskey, and he's proud of it. He puts together, he chooses these barrels, develops the blends, and puts in a bottle. It's delicious, and he's honest about the fact that it didn't come off of his still. So as long as we're transparent in that, then who cares? What's in the bottle should taste good.
What do you say on your bottle?
Ours says distilled and bottled by New Holland in Michigan, and that was a change because when we started the Beer Barrel Bourbon program, we had this great idea. Well, whiskey doesn't become mature in a weekend when you have this great idea. So we started the program with sourced whiskey, and we were sourcing it from MGP in southern Indiana. And so our first bottles, before we made the switch to our own grain to glass, it said Indiana bourbon produced and bottled in Holland, Michigan. So we put that right on the bottle. And when people would call and ask questions, we answered them honestly because we wanted to build trust, not sneak anything past anyone.
And legally, do you have to say produced versus distilled, or is there trust? What if a distillery isn't so trustworthy?
There are some examples of that with I think skirting the trust, and I don't want to name names. I don't think that my business is necessarily to out others. It's just to talk about what we think is the right approach. But if it's you're telling a story on the back of the bottle that says it's this recipe from old grandpa and it's produced in this state, when in reality it's sourced from another state, you can sneak that past the consumer, but it's going to end badly, So let's just be honest, tell the story, not be a marketing campaign, and drink good whiskey and drink it together happily.
All right, this is a good start. We're talking about a brewery that makes spirits as well on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
You're listening to Leaving by Dead Stars.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Brooks Headley, the pastry chef at Del Posto in Manhattan, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a special show. It's Whiskey Fest today, September 2015. Got the guys from New Holland Artisan Spirits. They're a brewery that's also making spirits now for 10 years. And Rich Blair is like the kind of master national guy and seems to know everything about their products. So what were you guys talking about? Every time we go off air, Stephen asks a good question.
I try to get some background. I was basically just asking about... Rich mentioned that they use an ale yeast, which made me think, because a lot of distilleries use something called turbo yeast, mm-hmm. which is just to make alcohol as fast as possible, whereas ale yeast is definitely going to take a bit longer, and I guess just want to know why you think it's important to do that and versus like a turbo yeast and how that might inform your whiskey.
Well, we have found through years of doing this now that using the ale yeast, it does happen much more slowly. It's a much slower approach to it. It takes longer. It's more labor intensive, but the alcohol that's produced And then some of those byproducts are, the byproducts that don't taste so great are very minimal because it's very thoughtful and careful fermentation. So then when we put the whiskey, the white whiskey, before it goes into a barrel, it doesn't taste too bad. So when it goes into the barrel, we're not necessarily aging all of these off flavors, these flavors that aren't, you know, pleasant. We're not aging those off of the whiskey. We're just trying to pick up those wood flavors from the barrel. So we don't need 6 or 8 years or 4 or whatever it is in the barrel to taste the way that we want, because we're not aging all that bad stuff off. Honestly, our stuff, we still adhere to the straight rule, which is an American rule, and it's 2 years in cask. We still adhere to that, but after 2 years, it's beautiful. And so we're not a slave to that calendar beyond 2 years. Once it's ready and it tastes good, we're putting that stuff into a bottle and drinking it, because we want to drink whiskey that we made. We don't want our grandkids to drink it.
Now you guys, you're going to Whiskey Fest tonight, and I think there's 55 of the best whiskey companies in the world. How do you stand out in an event like that?
Well, it's funny how it's evolved over the years, because I remember the first Whiskey Fest I went to, and it was in Chicago, and I believe it might have been 2010, but there were only a couple of craft guys. We were tucked away in the corner. We were sharing tables. None of us even had logoed tablecloths. We were just you know, jalopy in the corner of people pouring some whiskey that wasn't even ready to drink yet, to be honest. And then over the years, that's changed. Whiskey Advocate and some friends there, love Lou Bryson, who's one of their editors, he's done a good job of telling the story about craft and pouring some whiskey for himself and coming over and giving pointers. And so they've been really supportive. And over the years, we've seen more and more people from companies around the country jumping into craft and doing it really, really well. As that's happened, people like Whiskey Advocate, who run Whiskey Fest, they've started to embrace us more, but they made us earn it, which I think is fantastic. And there's some great distilleries, Westland out of Washington State. I think we're fantastic. Koval out of Chicago, New York Distilling Company right here, Tuttletown, the Hudson, you know, guys, the Arenzos from right here in New York. There are great distilleries, and that also means great bourbon and great malt whiskey made all over the United States. And Whiskey Fest has been a platform to show those of us that take a lot of pride in what we do.
So, you know, talking about books and experts, we have Lou Bryson's book, Taste and Whiskey, in front of us. And he's been here to Jimmy's Number 43 a couple times, led some whiskey tastings. What are some other books that people can learn from if they want to know more about whiskeys?
I think that books are a lot of fun. It gets you a little more comfortable with the terminology. If you really want to look at the history of whiskey bottles that have been available around the globe, then Jim Murray's Whiskey Bible is fantastic. Just pick up any book about whiskey is going to teach you something. But I'd rather pick up a glass. So let's drink some whiskey, figure out what you like, drink it the way you like as well. If you put a drop of water in your whiskey and the person across from you scoffs at you, or it's a distiller and he says, how dare you put water in my whiskey, find someone cooler to drink with. Because as soon as that whiskey is in your glass, it's yours.
I like one ice cube.
Yeah.
One ice cube guy.
Perfect.
That's perfect.
However, how do you like it, Steven?
I actually like one ice cube too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been proven now that our palates are all different, and if someone is drinking 100 proof whiskey and they say they're getting all of those flavors, that may very well be true. I don't. I need a little bit of water in my whiskey to pull it down so that that ethanol hit, that heat, is a little bit more subdued, and then you pick up on all of those amazing flavors of, you know, caramel, vanilla, toffee, butterscotch, all those awesome flavors come through, but add a high proof or right out of the barrel, not the same.
So beer and spirit. So let's go back to the history. I've only learned this recently. I didn't know that whiskey was distilled beer, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that process. And you talked about you can get the barley from your brewery and pick your barley for your spirits. But like, let's go to like Scotland or something.
Okay. Well, actually, I want to tell one very brief story first. That there is a really good friend, Jeff, who runs Rockford Brewing Company in Michigan, that I made the mistake of telling him that whiskey was beer all grown up, and he's a brewer. He didn't take it as well as I had hoped he would take that. He didn't find the humor in saying beer wasn't quite ready yet. So some people would be offended by thinking that it begins as beer and then it turns into something better. But it really is that way as far as what the base ingredients are, the fermentation, all of those things. It's just a couple extra steps after you're finished with the beer. It goes through the distillation process, and then it goes through an aging process if it's you know, brown whiskey. So they are very related, and it's easy. I don't want to say easy. That's not quite correct, but it's not a huge stretch for a brewery to tack on those extra couple of steps and start making spirits, because it's a natural progression, and some of us do it really, really well.
Rich is giving away all our secrets. Every brewery is going to start distilling now.
Well, we've had a lot of breweries come check us out, too, like Sun King in Indiana. They make amazing beer, and they're putting together a program. Mother Earth in North Carolina, they're doing it, getting into it. There's talk of Three Floyds getting into it. Ballast Point has been doing it for a long time, doing it really well. You can't have this conversation without mentioning Rogue or Anchor. You know, there are people that have been doing it for a long time and doing it well, and it's finally the rest of the world is starting to catch up with us, but we're happy to have a 10-year head start.
Yeah. Let's go to, like, Scotland.
Oh, yeah, so sorry. I would have to be honest. I'm not an expert in Scotch. I drink a little bit of Scotch here and there, but for the most part, I drink what our company and what my friends make, and that tends to be American craft whiskey. So I tend to drink a lot of that. If we want to talk about some other American guys, you know, I could probably go in depth with it. But as far as Scotch goes, honestly, I would probably say Joe. He knows the most at the table, on this end of the table at least, about Scotch.
I know that I like it a lot. There's a lot to go for. But if you're just talking about, like, the process of Scotch, so what differs, what makes Scotch different than, say, a bourbon or an American single malt, there's a lot of legalese going on. It has to be made in Scotland, hence it's Scotch. All Scotch, as opposed to bourbon, which is 2 years made in America, Scotch has to be 3 years and a day made in Scotland. And I think one of the things that goes with Scotch, and a lot of Scots are probably getting really angry at me right now, but there's like three or four distinct regions that make similar tastes, tasting Scotches, and that's all coming from my favorite word here, the terroir. So you're getting water and you're getting malts that are grown in different areas, and those are imparting different flavors onto your Scotches. I personally love all Scotch that is made with smoked barley and then also finished in a sherry cask. So you get that smoked up front, rounded off by this, like, delicious, sweet sherry. I'm getting excited just talking about it.
And most people think, you know, your average whiskey consumer, they think Scotch and think smoky and peaty, and it's going to be really earthy and, you know, a flavor that might be acquired over a long time of drinking whiskey. But there's plenty of great Scotch that isn't unpeated, and the process of peating is they smoke the barley over peat moss. So there is plenty of unpeated Scotch that is delicious. And the only other distinguishing characteristic of a single malt Scotch is it has to be 100% barley, which is very similar to the product we are about to drink here, is Zeppelin Bend from New Holland. It's a single malt American whiskey. A single malt Scotch is that desired desired term that you want to get to when you're making Scotch. There's great blended Scotch whiskeys, but single malt currently in the world we live in is that type of Scotch that people are seeking out.
What are the tasting notes for this?
Well, this, the grain bill, again, you know, I refer to the brewery
quite a bit.
Straight malt
whiskey, Zeppelin Bend, straight malt whiskey.
Zeppelin Bend is the name of a knot that was used to moor airships. And we felt at the time that this whiskey was what tied the brewery and distillery together. So very drunkenly around a campfire, we named it Zeppelin Bend.
Yeah,
it's a true story, I swear. And we also realized that we need to name things while sober from that point forward, because not everything needs to have this long-winded story behind it. But so the brewery influenced it quite a bit. Some of the grain that we use is heavily roasted, so you get some of those porter and stout flavors in this whiskey, dark chocolate, cocoa, coffee. Actually, I'll throw out another Whiskey Fest story, that there was this guy a few years ago that he was stumbling out of the fest, and he came up to our table and asked for another pour of the Cocoa Pebbles whiskey. I was offended for like a hot second, and then I realized that he was coming back for seconds, and he remembered our whiskey and wanted more of it. So
it does have that Cocoa Pebble. That
it does.
Little
yeah,
cocoa.
Chocolate, yeah.
Yep.
That
and we're not adding
dry,
any chocolate.
Like a dark chocolate finish.
Is that from the malt?
Yep,
yeah,
absolutely.
Off the malt. Yeah.
And I have to also, I think this is funny because Stranahan's is a whiskey that I've liked for a really long time. It's another malt whiskey, you know, out of Colorado. Stranahan's and New Holland both started making whiskey within a couple months of each other, completely unaware of each other's company. Very similar malt bill, very similar flavor profile. We age ours a little bit longer, but they're quite similar whiskeys, even down to the shape of the bottle. We were just a couple thousand miles apart, had no idea what the other was doing, and we followed this same path. It's just really interesting how creative people go toward the same finish line, not knowing about the other one. I have always found that really interesting.
Yeah, I was assuming that was just the style of bottle.
And that was 10 years ago. So we actually have one barrel of 10-year-old Zeppelin Bend. I know this isn't going to air until after Whiskey Fest, but those at Whiskey Fest will be able to enjoy a little bit of that 10-year-old whiskey tonight. So we have that heritage as a craft distillery, and we're thrilled to try it. None of us at this table have actually tried it yet, so we're going to be trying it for the first time tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
And how do I navigate the festival? I mean, I'm going tonight.
Good.
And I'm going to want to go up to your table, and you have secret stashes of things in the back.
That is the going rate, or the way that things are going now, is that everyone's going to have something under the table. We like to share. We like to give little sneak peeks of things. The VIP hour will be pouring some whiskeys that once they're gone, they're gone. But the 10-year Zeppelin is just going to be for people in the know. There are a handful of people that I want to try. Obviously, yourself included, Jimmy. We will get some 10-year American Single Malt in your glass. But Lou Bryson, he's going to be around. We've been talking about it. He can't wait to try it. There are a handful of people I want to take care of. And then word will travel, and everyone's under-the-table whiskey will disappear very quickly.
New Holland employees also included in these people.
Yeah, I would really like to taste it. Please.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, this is going back to how you make whiskey. Stephen, did you ever think about making a homebrew recipe that would be a beer base for distillers?
I've never made a beer base for distillers, but we often try to think about ways to kind of mimic that whiskey flavor. So at home, you might, you know, you can even take oak chips and soak them in whiskey or bourbon and then add that to your beer, and that's a way that you can make a really quick beer, bourbon barrel aged flavor to a beer.
And don't forget to call up your local craft breweries. They have barrels that need to find homes sometimes. So you can always find little 5-10 gallon barrels if you look hard enough. So you age your own beer at home. So it's always a good opportunity.
Yeah, actually, that's funny. When I was on your show last time, Jimmy, the BJCP judge that was also on the show, within minutes of the show ending, he had sent me an email asking if we had any barrels around, and I sent him a couple of gin barrels, and he made some really cool Belgian beer and aged it in a small gin cask. So definitely get a hold of people. If they have a distillery, sometimes they're free, sometimes there's a small price, but we want those barrels to get used, not wasted. So
A lot of breweries, like over at Kelso, where our friend Chris Kuzme is working now, and Kelly Taylor, they've got a whole bunch of just liquor casks.
Yeah, and here in the city, you can talk to Tuttletown. They'll help you out with barrels often. Kings County Distilling in the Navy Yard also has a bunch of small barrels. And they do small barrels because it speeds up the process.
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys work with small barrels, or do you work with
kind of currently are at a point where we are not using any more small barrels. We had been until the latest release of our rye, which just released, and that was the last whiskey that we had in smaller barrels, and I think we actually have a peated whiskey coming out next spring that would be in small barrels. But currently, we are not laying down any whiskey that is in anything less than a traditional 53-gallon barrel.
Do you feel like when you get to that point, you've kind of made it being 10 years in?
There's a little feeling of success, and we feel like we got our big kid pants on now. But there's myths out there, and everyone has their own opinion on whether or not the small barrels affect the whiskey in a way that's, you know, as good as a larger barrel. And I think I don't think it's a black or white issue, good or bad. I think it's going to affect, give out different flavors. And we were doing it for 8 minutes or 8 years, so we really enjoyed the product coming out.
Awesome. We're having a great show here talking about beer and spirits on Beer Sessions and Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes.
This is Superficial Rappers by Rectech.
Cider Week helps to bring profitability to local orchards while reviving heirloom apple varieties by cultivating awareness of craft cider. Cider Week connects cider makers from New York State and select pioneering guest cideries outside the state to buyers from top restaurants, bars, and retail shops across New York City. Those culinary tastemakers, in turn, help increase consumer awareness of cider's pleasures by hosting public events, tastings, dinners, classes, and pairings that build appreciation and demand for regional ciders.
Hi, this is Chad Pagano, former Army sniper, host of the Wild Game Domain, and you're listening to the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is our special Beer and Spirits show. It's Whiskey Fest in New York, and the guys from New Holland Artisan Spirits are here. We're talking about spirits. So, Joe, what did you ask me? You said, why do I have so many New York spirits?
Oh, no, just as a... As a regional manager going into a bar, it's my second nature to look at a back bar and to look at a tap list, and I noticed that you had almost 100% New York tap handles on. And so I was just wondering if that was curious. Some people like to just keep it completely local, or if that just happened to happen because there's a lot of really, really good New York beers nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, that and the spirits, it's evolved a lot so that there are so many great new, you know, New York brewers and distillers that it's our backyard, and we're getting to know them well. And but when we got our full liquor license this year, just want to mention this, which is one reason why we're doing the show, is that we didn't have any pressure to. We already been open for years. We have craft beer. We have food. So adding the liquor license was really just like a little add on. So why not get the best stuff? And you know, our mission is always about indie and small. So the New York State stuff is easy to serve. We're meeting so many new distillers and indie guys, and I guess that brings up a whole point. What is indie spirits? Are you guys an indie spirit?
I would say that that's another one of those ambiguous terms without a true definition, but I definitely put us in that indie category, that independent. We're independently owned. We don't adhere to specific production guidelines. We try to be artists as much as possible and creative and experimental. And you know, to kind of build on the independent thing, we've seen the trend start to move a little bit with this local conversation. Yes, we should all support local, whether it's agriculture or spirits or beer or whatever it is. Supporting local is a great thing, but we need to challenge local to be great as well. And we're a little bit ahead of it in Michigan because we have 200 breweries in Michigan now that are members of the Brewers Guild, the Michigan Brewers Guild. So we challenge each other to be great, because just drinking a beer, drinking a spirit because it's made down the street is great as long as they don't take advantage of you. And they make really good stuff. And we're seeing that trend now where people are challenging their local producers to be great. And so it's nice to see so much New York stuff, you know, on your tap list over there. And there are some great New York distilleries. I listed some in another segment already. That there's some great things being made locally here in New York. You can't say that everywhere in the country. And this is where I need to stop talking.
Okay, let's talk about Michigan. So you guys are, where in Michigan?
We're in southwest Michigan, about half an hour west of Grand Rapids. So Grand Rapids is kind of currently becoming the beer hub of Michigan in terms of where it's all being consumed. You got some great breweries in other towns nearby. But yeah, we're right on the lakeshore, a small Dutch town, Dutch settled. We used a little bit of that heritage in our brands, and Knickerbocker Gin, for example, is a good example of the Dutch settlers and how we feel a little bit entitled to include them in some of our branding. But yeah, it's a small Dutch town, vacation town, really, really great place, right on the water. You can go to the beach, you can grab some beer and spirits at our place.
Holland,
mm-hmm. Michigan, yeah.
So if I go there, are there any destination beer and spirit places that our listeners should check out when they come to visit you?
In Holland? Come to our pub and get a hold of one of us at this table so we can sit down and have a drink with you. That's probably the best way to get yourself. And then go to the beach and go see Lake Michigan. It is beautiful, one of the largest freshwater oceans on the planet. So I would say in Holland, the big points that people come to see is Lake Michigan. And then in the spring, we also have Tulip Time, where we have 1 million people overtake this little town of 30,000 people to come look at flowers. So we stay out of the way during that week. But a lot of cultural heritage, a lot of pride and heritage in Holland. And I think that shows in a lot of the businesses that are there too, whether it's making furniture or whiskey or whatever it is coming out of West Michigan.
But we do have a beer trail that runs up the lakeshore. So if you're not going to stay in Holland, you can hit, 30 breweries in a weekend if you want. You have some of the bigger ones to name are, to our southeast, we have Bell's, straight east, we have Founders, up the lakeshore, up to Traverse City, you have Shorts Brewing Company, and tons of great smaller breweries that are popping up along the way. So you will be in no shortage of good beer or spirits nowadays.
Have you been out there, Stephen?
No, I haven't spent much time in Michigan, but feeling like I need to.
Yes.
Because, Stephen, one of the books that he wrote, it was part of your journey as you were learning about beer. You went to some great breweries around the world, didn't you?
Yeah. We went to, 30 breweries or so in North America and Europe, and went completely around Michigan. So
we missed the mitten somehow.
Yeah.
Well, cheers to Michigan. So what's this next whiskey? So these are some beer that you made and you liked it so much you distilled it?
This is a great example of how our brewery roots can influence some of our how we distill and how we approach distilling. And it's our brewer series, which we're now in the process of kind of shifting more towards bourbon production at the moment. It was a good way for us to just explore different methods. We talked about smaller barrels earlier, different ingredients. This malt house, Rich can speak to it. It's literally a mash bill we use for a beer we made. And when we tasted the beer, we just decided, hey, this needs to be distilled.
No, that's exactly what happened too. It was it was called Charcuter Rye, and it was a smoked rye Doppelbock. Yeah, Jimmy gets the pun. It paired really well with charcuterie, go figure. But it was a smoked rye Doppelbock, and then we finished that in brandy casks. And when you drank that beer, it just tasted like it wanted to become whiskey. So we made an unhopped version of that, distilled it, aged it in new barrels, and that's what became Malt House, which is the one that we're drinking right now. Really nice, 90 proof, malted rye, malted barley, and some of that barley is smoked, just this little hint of smoke kind of playing in the background, really fun whiskey. And this brewer series, Joe alluded to it, but it is on its way out. So we have the rye whiskey is available right now, and then there's another one, a smoked whiskey coming in the spring, and then that's it. We're making bourbon all day, every day, because we just don't have enough of it.
And one thing I've noticed from previous shows, when we're talking beer, we're talking in terms of days, weeks, and months, and we haven't said anything less than years today. How do you, as a distiller with the mindset of a brewer, keep pushing and experimenting when you just have to wait so long?
Well, that's a really good question, and that's why we started with the small barrels, because you get feedback so much quicker. There are two things, to really oversimplify it, there are two things that happen in that cask. One is the wood interacting with the spirit, so you're influencing the flavor in that way. And the other thing that happens in that barrel is oxidation of that spirit. And that's where you get some of those tropical fruit flavors, stone fruit. You get some of those other flavors that you pick up in whiskey, they come from the oxidation process. There is no way to speed that up. You can speed up the wood interaction, but you can't speed up time and oxidation. So in a big barrel with longer time, you're going to get more of those secondary flavors that make a whiskey from good to great, in our opinion. In a small cask, you get the wood influence. So you can put something in a small barrel, and then 6 months later you taste it, and you're like, now I see what's going to happen, and it can graduate to a bigger barrel. So that's the method that we've taken. That is also not meant to say anyone else is doing it incorrectly, but that's the path that we went down.
Yeah, it takes patience, but we have to be honest. At the end of that time period, that barrel is by no means full. Our team has been tasting it along the way,
yes.
And it's a fun process to watch it change. But yeah, we have we just have to be patient. You have to be able to let it sit, and you don't want it to you don't want to release it before it's ready. We've had to make that call plenty of times.
And being 10 years in, I imagine you've made your fair share of mistakes and have a better sense of...
Yes.
So you've had the house whiskey at our pub in Holland. If it doesn't come out as intended, it doesn't hit a bottle.
That's
is incredibly
say,
painful.
Who drinks the mistakes?
I have a cabinet at home that's filled with mistakes that I give to unsuspecting guests when they come over to my house. And we did find a home for some of that within our house whiskey at our pub, which is still better than most house whiskeys you would have anywhere in the country. But it was not quite what we had intended, so it doesn't go into that bottle. But you're right. Sometimes when you're creative, it's an expensive and painful result.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen often, but it has.
And on that point, that is actually one of the key benefits we've had as a brewery and distillery is we've been a successful brewery since, you know, for 18 years now, and having distilling being the last 10 years of that, we have room to make mistakes and we have room to wait. Like, there's been, you know, we've never had the issue where we need to make a revenue goal, so we need to put this whiskey that's not ready. We have a brewery that's been helping us along the way, and it's led to some great things and has given us the ability to say, oh, well, that's not good enough for bottle, or, hey, that needs to wait another year or another 6 months or what have you.
The first whiskey we ever released was 3 years old, and that was for two reasons. One, because we had the ability to be patient, and the other is that the president and founder of our company, the one who got bit by the distilling bug and started the whole thing, he changed the law in 2008. He played a big role in it. So that we could begin distilling from grain to make whiskey. He knew it was going to happen, so the day that law changed, we had three-year-old whiskey, because we've been doing it for the past 3 years. So it's interesting, though, that the first one we released was 3 years old. It wasn't 6 months because the light bill was due. That is something that I would almost call unfair as a being affiliated with a brewery. We play by different rules. We source in different ways. It made the process... Yeah, you know, I hesitate to use the word simple, but it did simplify it for us a little bit. It made it much easier, the entry much easier for us.
Cheers. So this is a great one, Malt House. Cheers. I don't know how you allocate your resources and figure out what you want to sell. I mean, why is bourbon so popular? Like, there's people making just a corn whiskey, which is like, what, an unaged bourbon, right? Or is that a difference?
Well, if it's white, if the bottle sits there and you can see through it without any color, that means it's unaged. But you can make a corn whiskey without it being bourbon. What is that, 100% corn, right?
I believe it is just 100% corn. Yeah.
Where a bourbon is, it just has to be over 51%, and there can be rye, there can be barley in there as well. But a corn whiskey would be 100% corn. But bourbon's popular just because I think there's a little bit of nostalgia to bourbon. It's that cowboy drinking, you know, liquid that brings you down to your roots, and it's just an American drink, you know? Scotch... is a Scotch drink. You know, we just have a little bit of a tie to that, and it can only be made in America, and, you know, we like to drink what we produce. So I think it's in that realm, and just the craft boom. There's so many different options in craft bourbon right now. People want to try it all, and it's a flavor we all like, and I think people just are latching on like never before. It's crazy.
It's interesting, too, how, like, craft producers, we wanted to make American whiskey. When you think of American whiskey, you think of bourbon. So we started producing a lot of bourbon. That nudged our friends in Kentucky to be a little... They still make 95% of the world's bourbon, and they make some of the best bourbon on the planet. Our friends in Kentucky deserve all the credit in the world. But we also nudged them, and that made them start being a little more creative. So that's where Makers 46 came from, and Jim Beam, and a lot of their craft, signature craft series. And they had to react a little bit to us little guys that were pushing some boundaries and breaking some rules. And then if you look now, is it Nikka, I think, that out of Japan, that's making a coffee grain, because they can't call it bourbon, so they named it after the pot still, the coffee still that we use to make bourbon. So as soon as the Japanese grab onto bourbon, look out, they do whiskey really, really well. So I think they're in turn going to challenge us to continue to get better. Bourbon is just scratching the surface. It's not going to turn and come back down. It's riding high right now, and it's because it's so delicious.
Let's come back. You're in New York City, so this winter I want to go to destinations. I don't care so much about cocktails, but destination spirits places in New York City where I can get a good product like yours. Joe, do you know?
Joe Stelmark, the local boy.
Jimmy's number 43. We'll probably have some of
this. There you go.
Yeah, we're trying to be more spirits. We're not really a cocktail place. We have spirits to go with our beer.
There's so many great places you can go out there and just find back bars filled with browns. I mean, you go places nowadays, and it's not uncommon for, like I said earlier, to have 50 plus. Well,
where's a few that you're selling to where I can find
where
your
we go last night?
A couple places that I live over in Brooklyn, so I end up hitting the town over that way a lot. But a couple places that I found have great cocktails is Bearded Lady, which is over in Washington on the Prospect Heights, Crown Heights area. Congress makes some good cocktails over on Court Street.
Went to Clover Club. They had a great back bar full of whiskey, too. Yeah. Any that stand out to you, Rich, that are just you got to go to?
I bounce around so much when I come to New York. It's pretty amazing to me. You know, being from the Midwest, you have to have a destination bar. You have to pick it out before you drive into that city, with some exceptions. I mean, Chicago's a great town. But if you're going to a city, you have to know where you're going before you get there. Here, you can find a parking spot and fall down, and you're going to have great whiskey within 10 feet of you. Like, it's pretty amazing, the concentration of awesome places here in New York. So, quite honestly, I don't have a favorite or any destinations. Every block has somewhere that's going to blow my mind when I walk in, and then I'm going to thank them for having, you know, our single malt on the back bar. We did that several times yesterday. It was a really fun night that didn't seem like it wanted to end.
Yeah, but we're sitting here. This seems like a great place.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Looks like a whiskey bar.
It does. No kidding. Looks like some monks have drank whiskey in here at some point.
Steven, any new favorite place that you like in New York City? For drinking in general.
I mean, I've just been thinking about how I really like that you now have whiskey here, because whiskey I feel like is something I always want to drink when I'm out, but I just don't go to that part of the menu. And I'm wondering how you necessarily, I think of it almost like ordering a latte versus getting someone to order the espresso. Like, how do you get someone to, that might be a craft beer lover, to kind of just like go through that long list and try their first, like, really nice.
I think the fun part of that is, again, the whole brewery and distillery thing. If you go to any brewer, there's two things that they have in their home, and one is the 30-pack of something, whatever their local PBR, Hams, what have you, is guaranteed it happens, and they have whiskey, and it might be scotch, it might be bourbon, might be what have you. And so there's always people who are into craft beer, people who have showed up because there's 12 awesome beers on tap, are just waiting to dive into that whiskey because they're looking for new flavors. They're looking for something new and bold and something to challenge them and their taste buds and what they find normal. And so you go into a lot of great craft beer bars, and they're going to have a great whiskey selection. Ginger Man Manhattan strikes out to me. Now Jimmy's number 43. And you're just talking about how do you get them from the beer to the whiskey. I think it's a natural progression.
I think a cocktail can be that bridge, too, because I think of New York as a cocktail town, because I can get cocktails here that I can only get in a couple other cities in the entire country. Like, it's done so well here. So if you want to get people to move from beer, which, quite honestly, I don't think we need to move anyone away from beer. We need to get them to drink the occasional cocktail.
You have two hands.
Don't apologize. Well said. But put a really nice old-fashioned or Manhattan in their hand, and it's going to bridge them. It softens that whiskey. It makes it a little easier, and then they can become a whiskey drinker.
Well, this is a great show, gentlemen. Thanks for joining me. We got from New Holland Artisan Spirits, Rich Blair, Adam Dickerson,
yeah.
Joe Stelmark, and Stephen Villan, our co-hosts tonight. Thanks so much for joining
Cheers,
me.
On Cheers, Cheers, Cheers,
Whiskey Fest. Yeah.
Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, engineer Jack Inslee, and thanks for listening. Catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, yeah.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.